Welcome to the F Sharp Podcast, presented by Harmony Wealth, a podcast geared to educate you on all things financial. Co-hosts Tanner Bortnum and Adam Henning discuss various financial topics presented in a consumable and entertaining manner. Tanner is a certified financial planner, JD, and financial expert, while Adam is a marketing professional and small business owner. It's time to harmonize. Sit back and enjoy the episode. Your future self will thank you.
Welcome to episode 58 of the F Sharp Podcast, presented by Harmony Wealth, a podcast geared to educate you on all things financial. I am your co-host, Adam Henning. I'm joined, as always, with co-host Tanner Bortnum. Tanner is a certified financial planner, JD, and financial expert. Episode 58, we are recording the first week of June 2024, and it will be our regularly scheduled quarterly update. This one will be, obviously, quarter one of 2024. Pretty exciting quarter from a financial or market standpoint. And then more of the same for other things, but we'll get to that later. We'll start off, Tanner, with market-related performance from the first quarter. Talk to us about that and where we sit.
Yeah, it was a really good quarter. The S&P was up 10.2 roughly for the first quarter. NASDAQ was up a little bit more, closer to 11. The Dow Jones is up only about 3.5%. That is, in a bigger quarter like this, where the markets really tend to take off, that tends to happen as well. The Dow tends to lag. It's more value stocks. So definitely saw a lot of the growth names. You even had some of those meme stocks rear their ugly head that we also...
Doge came back.
Yeah. That GameStop. You see some of those. Trump Social, that new one. Again, not getting into any politics like we never do here, just the company itself makes something like 300 or claims to make 300 million, and it was valued at the peak of the stock at like 7 billion. I mean, just way out of whack. Way out of whack.
Well, how does that happen? I mean, we'll just do a brief sidebar.
Sure.
Is it pure speculation just because of his name, or is it
conspiracy theory,
money
line? No.
Or what? I mean, what
well,
is
I mean,
it? Tinfoil hat?
No, it's going to be more. It's going to be more similar to what happened with the meme stocks. GameStop and gosh, I'm blanking on it. The AMC, I think.
Yep,
is that right?
Yep. Yeah. Movie theater. Yeah.
Yeah, the movie theater. Yep.
AMC. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So they, and there were numerous other ones going on at that time as well. And it's just a craze, right? Like there is a sector of this country, not saying good or bad, that's up for everyone else to decide, but there is a sector of this country that is just wildly supportive of former President Trump. And now that that became a thing that they could buy, they wildly supported it. And it just drove the price crazy high. It has since settled back down, but it is from even now, like, I mean, I don't know what it is today. I don't track that. I don't buy it for clients. I don't buy speculative things like that for clients. But it's something where it is so wildly out of whack in terms of fundamentals that that's all it is. It's a pure, I want to own a piece of this. Like, I mean, I'll throw one out there that I have. I'm a Manchester United soccer fan, and I own one share of Manchester United stock.
Are you voting member?
I mean, technically, yeah, but then my one vote doesn't do a whole lot.
Many soccer teams do that, or is that
no?
I don't follow it close enough.
Not to get into sports, but Manchester United is a terribly run team. It is really, really silly that there is any stock, but it was just the greedy owners basically selling their souls to everything and not caring about the team. But anyways, I digress.
That's relevant.
It is, but that was a long time ago. Ironically, they're the same owners that own the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay,
so they own Manchester United and we could do numerous podcasts on that financial mess that they have created to benefit themselves and burden everyone else.
Sure.
Anywho, back to this, back to Trump stock, whatever, True Social. It really is just that, you know, there was a craze, it came out, things have been going really well. People get in the, you know, fear of missing out again, right? The markets have been going basically only straight up the first quarter of 2024. And so everyone thinks that that's going to continue. We all have, and it, you know, society as a whole, not people individually, but society as a whole has amnesia that we forget that markets can go back down, or we forget that, you know, the price to earnings matter, or we forget that actually making money as a company matters, or we forget that, you know, all of these lessons that we learn every single time. And the unfortunate factor for those people that forget those lessons is, you know, history will come back, and it will come back with vengeance for those that don't pay attention to it, and it will be painful. So at some point in time, those things are going to correct. At some point in time, you know, a lot of these companies that were going up is, you know, fueled by AI. Again, a lot of the tech stocks, Nvidia is a company that I'm sure a lot of people at this point have heard about. I know we've talked about a couple times on earlier shows, but like, it's, you know, arguably, I don't even know if it's arguably, is the number one semiconductor chip company in the world. And it has just gone absolutely nuts in terms of its returns on the stock. But they at least make money. Like, they do stuff. They are number one. So there is a reason that their PE multiples can spread and kind of push the envelope. Whereas a lot of those meme stocks in 2020 or 2021, whenever that was, and some of this now is coming about again, they're not making money, or they make extremely little money compared to what the valuation of the company is. Real quick, like, no one would go to True Social and say, you make $300 a year, I will buy you for $7 billion. Like, no one would say that, but that's what people were buying each individual stock, as if the company was worth $7 billion. And that's where it gets a little ridiculous. But like I said, it's come back down since then.
So with the NVIDIA talk or performance, I should say,
mm-hmm.
Are there outliers that are boosting that 10.2% total gain?
Absolutely.
That might kind of swayed or what's the word I'm looking for? Create an illusion for the overall market performance? Okay.
Yep. And now, so let's hit on that. We've talked about this in other market updates last year, or even probably about...
I think we bring it up consistently ever since we brought it up the first time.
Yeah. Yep. So the Magnificent Seven tech stocks, I don't know what they account for today. I guess I didn't look it up before this episode, but you know, roughly there's somewhere between seven stocks in the S&P 500 are somewhere between 25 and 30% of the overall weight. So when those seven stocks are doing well, the S&P does really well, regardless of what the other 493 stocks are doing, because they can really pull it around. Now, this one of the S&P going up is less about the Magnificent Seven. They are still doing well, I mean, barring Tesla. Apple's kind of just sitting there. But there is more breadth in, they call it, you know, depth and breadth of the market. So a lot of the other companies are helping participate in the markets going up. Like, you look at the Russell 2000 or the Russell 3000, like, it's not doing as well, but you don't have this huge variance of, okay, the S&P 500 is up 10, but the Russell 2000, which is all the little stocks, I shouldn't say all, but littler 2000 littler stocks, are doing terribly. Okay, that's concerning. Where at least this is some momentum. Now, I'm not saying it's going to keep running, I'm not saying it's going to last forever, all of those things, but it is more positive right now than it was, because the market kind of as a whole is moving forward versus, just seven to 10 stocks moving it around or making it look like everything's great, when really a lot of stocks aren't doing that well.
Well, I read an article on Forbes that, I mean, most of the Magnificent Seven are based in technology, and the technology Correct. Sector was actually lagging comparative to where it normally is. So I don't know if you have anything.
The big one with that one is Tesla. Tesla's gotten hammered so far this year. So because Tesla's so big, Tesla's part of the Magnificent Seven, Tesla's going to really pull it down. Apple, similarly, I can look that up really quick. I don't think Apple's up too much for the year.
But I mean, does that have an effect? I know it has an effect on the market.
Apple's down 9% for the year. You know, so there are some of those huge companies that they're not partaking in this, that, and that's why the technology sector is pulled back, right? Because Apple's the biggest or one of the biggest, you know, tech companies in the world. And when it's down 9% for the year, that has a big drag on an entire sector.
Sure. And yet it's kind of reassuring. I would imagine that two giants are down and the overall, the market is up 10.2%. Is that
exactly? Yeah, I was trying to say.
Curious to filter out Nvidia and see where the percentage lies without that. If they're that much of an outlier, I don't know. I don't obviously check it as much as you do, but I feel like as a casual observer, I feel like that would be a little bit encouraging heading into quarter two. So,
I didn't say that. You did. So with that, that's what I was trying to allude to or not allude to. That's what I was just saying, is that there's more breadth in the market, and that's a positive thing for the markets moving forward, because if all stocks are performing well, we know that the economy is doing well, you know, those types of things. It's good when all the market moves ahead together. You know, at different levels in different sectors, but when they're all moving together, or at least most of them are moving together in a positive direction, that's a good sign. Now, that doesn't inherently mean just go back the Brinks truck up and buy everything immediately, because we have had a really big run to start the the first quarter of the year. You had it in here someplace in your notes. It's the strongest first quarter in 5 years. So does that mean that things can keep going up? Yes, there are good signals. The jobs market, we continue to create more jobs. Inflation continues to be, we talk about it every time, continues to be sticky. It's not really coming down. If anything, it ticked back up slightly. But the Fed is still holding on to their, going to keep rates how they are, and projecting that they will cut rates 3 times yet this year. We'll see if that happens or doesn't happen. But there are a lot of positive indicators. But again, that doesn't mean that, it still is the market. You still need to do your research. You still need to do the intelligent things. Like, it's, to use another football or sports analogy, which happens to be football, a lot of investing is blocking and tackling, right? It's not about throwing a Hail Mary, It's not, that's what the meme stocks were. You're throwing a Hail Mary, hopefully you bought in early and you got out early and you made a bunch of money. That's the Hail Mary. Those don't work very often. So it's just the blocking and tackling. Just do the normal things over and over and over again, and you're going to end up being successful. As a Chiefs fan, the first Super Bowl we ever won, Hank Stram was the coach, and he kept saying, he kept saying, just keep matriculating the ball down the field. That's the same thing. Just keep doing the right things, small things correctly over and over and over again, and it will have a major compounding factor in your life. So keep doing that with your investments. If you want to buy in now, feel free, do your research. But the markets and the economy as a whole do look, do have some positive readings. Now, I guess one negative of that is the last, I believe it is the last three. I read this a couple weeks ago. So, but I believe it is the last three major recessions
had a strong first quarter.
No, but it was, The yield curve inverted, which we've had for at least a year. The yield curve inverted, markets hit all-time highs, and then we went into a recession. Now, does that mean a recession is necessarily coming? Not trying to scare people either. No, I'm just saying we're still a little bit in that wait and see mode in my mind. We have not hit this soft landing. We're not out of the woods, so we don't know exactly how it's going to be. We could follow what history did of the last three major recessions because we have just hit all-time highs and we've had an inverted yield curve. For those that don't know what that means, it's in the bond industry. And it just means that the two-year treasury and the 10-year treasury are inverted. So typically, if you're going to buy a 10-year and have your money in a treasury for 10 years, you should get paid more per year because you're locking your money up longer than a two-year. They've been inverted. The two-year is giving you more money than a 10-year. Doesn't make sense, right? But that's how the bond market has been for about the last, probably, like I said, year. And we have hit all-time highs. Does that mean a recession is necessarily coming? Not necessarily, but it has happened before. So keep that in mind as well.
Sure. The only sector to decline in the first quarter was real estate. And then that, I feel like, coincides a little bit with, I don't know about you, Tanner, but I got my home and auto insurance the last couple of weeks, and ouch. Absolutely. Yeah. Ouch. Is that just insurance markets catching up with all of the gains you speak more intelligently.
The inflation.
Well, the inflation, but the property costs or property valuation. Mm-hmm. There's the phrase I was searching for.
Yeah. Yep.
Which, you know, really isn't realized. I mean, I guess it is realized when houses are sold and bought. But is there any other variables that play into that? Or, I mean, my goodness,
yeah.
23 and 26%, I think, were the figures, respectively, for home and auto.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot. I'm not in those industries, so I don't know what their costs are. An easy example, would be the auto industry. So we all know that cars have gotten exceedingly more expensive because of inflation and because of what happened with COVID and supply chain and all of those things. And once those prices go up, they don't come back down. They might just plateau for a bit. But with auto insurance, for example, if there are people out there that have a new car replacement, because some of these auto insurance companies have that, where I bought a car in 2018, but my auto insurance is a new car replacement of the same make and model. Okay, well, if that new make and model is now 20 grand more and you get into an accident, that insurance company is paying for that. And
that
so now on the home side, I don't know. There's clearly something with that. Like I said, I'm not in that industry, but it's catching up for some of these things in terms of they clearly had either a bunch of losses or inflation or a combination of the two. And because that's all insurance is, it's just spreading the risk among a bunch of people so that when a bad thing happens to a person, they're not completely on the hook for said thing. We all kind of bear a little bit of that and help pay for it. So that if that bad thing happens to you ever, everyone else kind of helps you pay for it. That's the gist of insurance. And so anyways, those costs have clearly gone up. And they have with everything. You know, we talk about it all the time. Inflation's still a little bit higher. Is there price gouging? I'm sure there is. I'm not going to go, you know, beat down corporations' doors saying that everything's price gouging because, you know, the cost of all the materials to make everything has gone up. The cost of labor has significantly gone up. I mean, wages have gone up a lot since, you know, COVID. So you start factoring in all those layers, that adds up, and that now makes all the stuff that we want to buy a lot more expensive because you got to pay the people to make it and you got to pay for all the stuff that makes it, you know, to make it, and shipping is more expensive. I mean, just everything, and you start adding that all together, it adds up really quickly.
Will things ever return to cheap or affordable as we knew it? Or is the toothpaste out of the tube? Or
yeah.
The only thing that can do that is a recession?
No, even then, even then, it's not that. So I think on the surface of your question, how most people are going to think of that is you know, I don't even know what a gallon of milk costs. What, you know, $5? We don't buy a gallon of milk. You got two kids.
Well, I'm in the Midwest in a small town, so
that's fine. People, it doesn't matter. You know, like, $4. Let's say $4.
Yeah. Okay. Four. Yeah.
So if it's $4 now, that means it was $2 to $3 before. And so, anyways, I'm just using it as an example. Don't anchor to the numbers. What I think most people will think of when they hear that question is, "Will things return to cheap?" Is, okay, well, when is milk going to go back to $2 to $3 a gallon then? And that won't happen. Now maybe milk itself will, but overall in all of the economy, that's not happening. Prices have gone up and they're here to stay. So the only way to make them, now for people on listening on the podcast, I'm doing air quotes here, to make it cheap again is we have to increase household income. Wait. So that, you know, what used to be, again, I know that this is ridiculous, but let's say it was 1% of your paycheck to buy a gallon of milk, which it wouldn't be. That's astronomically high. But and now it's 2% because milk is more expensive. Well, we need to increase take-home pay so that the $4 per gallon milk goes back to 1% of your pay. Like, your pay needs to increase so that it goes back down to 1% of your expenses. And again, those are wildly high numbers. Just I'm using it for a very broad example.
Right. I don't know if you've seen this a lot, but I feel like the last couple weeks has just been kind of infiltrating of the comfortable living or comfortable buying household income required to buy a home specifically for the market I live in, which is floated by the news outlets. Star Tribune of buying a house in Minneapolis was, I can't remember off the top of my head, but within the last couple of years, it went from like 58,000 to buy a middle class home would be the annual household income that you would need, and now that's like 106,000, which is just insane.
It is, but here's the aspect of that is well, finish your thought.
That's it. It's a statement. I have no thought. It's wild to
it is, but that
visualize that and how we go back, or I know we probably won't go back. We just need to push the bar up in terms of income, like you said, but I feel like that's a big stressor on just, you know, employers in general, or and that has an effect on inflation too, just like you said, wages go up and costs of
right, it becomes professionals it and, becomes and time a, goes up. A not, I mean, and that's what the Fed, at least a year ago, was saying they need to stomp out. We'll see if they hold to their guns and get it out, because three rate cuts this year, I don't think is going to get that out. And it becomes a vicious cycle of, okay, houses cost too much, so people need to make more money. So employees demand more money. So employers, to make sure that they can keep running their business, pay people more money. And because people are asking for money at all places, that means all the materials that they're getting are now costing more money. So then, because business owners don't want to go out of business, shocker, they raise prices to make sure that they can have a living. And then those prices are just passed down back to the consumer. Like all of these things, it's really, one of the things that's really funny to me is and teach their own, right? Like, we all want to make more money. No qualms there with anyone wanting to do it, but it's funny to me that people think like, well, if I make more money, you know, these other things aren't going to happen. It's like, no, it all just comes back, right? Like, or raising business taxes or whatever, like tax them. That's just a tax on us. You know, like, it's just funny, right? Because it all trickles down into the stuff that we buy. Taxes, wage increases, inflation and cost of goods, all of that is just ending up being paid again by us in the stuff that we buy by being more expensive. So with that thing from the Star Tribune, though, I have no doubt that that math is correct. Now, I do think it's slightly skewed in not looking at the full picture. I think that it's accurate. I don't think that that's a lie. I just think that we've had inflation and housing prices went up crazy fast. And shocker, we've been saying it for 2 years on the podcast, that it's not going to be sustainable. And here we are, it's not. And the biggest thing with having to have 106,000 or whatever you said it was, is actually the interest rates, because we were in an artificially low interest rate environment because the Fed was holding that down. So the starting factor of, well, you only needed 56,000 5 years ago was artificially being held down because interest rates weren't a free market. Interest rates were being held down by the Fed. So if markets were able to dictate interest rates, maybe we wouldn't be getting 3% mortgages. Everyone would have been used to the 4.5-5% range. So instead of needing 56,000 5 years ago, you needed 75,000. And now that 25,000 jump is still bad, but it's not doubling, right? Like, and that's the part right now. It's like, holy cow, that doubled how much income you need. And it's like, well, it's because we had a bunch of really
amazing factors. Convenient time frame that they
It absolutely was.
Set it up for.
It was a very convenient time frame to be buying homes, you know, 10 years ago. Yeah. Yep. And we just don't have that. That's not the game anymore.
Sure. Then we'll close with the last little topic here. Some news noteworthy thing that happened in quarter one was Sam Bankman-Fried was convicted on all seven counts of fraud, conspiracy, and money laundering, sentenced to 25 years in prison, and ordered to forfeit $11 billion. Holy smokes. What's worse? Would you go to prison for 25 years for $11 billion? Which one would you rather? He gets both, but
No, I had no sympathy here. 25 years probably isn't enough. I mean, the entire thing was a scam. Bernie Madoff.
Are you surprised?
Yeah, kind of.
I feel like I'm surprised that's pretty harsh. Usually, white-collar crime or, you know, slippery. Okay.
So I don't remember what Bernie Madoff's total amount of money was, but this is a similar aspect, right? He completely scammed the government and a boatload of people out of money. And Bernie Madoff's was something like 100 consecutive life terms that he's, you know, it was insane how long he was never going to get out of jail. And this is 25 years. So I actually think it's quite lenient. Now, again, I am not a litigating attorney, so maybe it's spot on perfect. I don't know. I just, I can look that up real quick. Bernie Madoff.
$18 billion. The crazy, you can look it up. The crazy thing is, like, you know, I've watched the documentary, phenomenal documentary. He was successful. I don't know if Sam, I'm not going to say that he was the same, but like Bernie was actually good at what he did. He just had absolutely no reason to do what he did.
Agreed.
But he did.
So what did you find out what he embezzled?
Bernie?
Yeah.
Wiki says $18 billion, of which $14 billion has been recovered and returned.
Okay, Eve, let's just keep it at
150 years in prison.
Correct. So for $18 billion, he goes to jail for 150 years. Sam Bankman-Fried's at $11 billion, 25. Like,
yeah, and Sam's what? He's younger and he'll get out. Okay.
That doesn't matter. That shouldn't have a factor. I know people will say that, but too bad. Like, you know, if someone murders someone, like, you get a life sentence, whether you're 25, 45, or 65, a life sentence is the rest of your life. So, you know, anyways, with Bernie's being 150 years, half of that's 75 years, you know, for $11 billion. So I think 25 is it's getting off pretty easy.
Did he have any
comparatively
co-conspirators?
Yeah, but it was his just mainly fiance, I think. Fiance, but then she struck a deal with the government to testify against him. I don't know how long she's going to jail, but a lesser sentence to be the key witness in his fraud. But yeah, zero sympathy. See ya. That's what happens when you screw people over. Bye-bye.
Will there be any future language that's drafted to prevent what he did, or is
it? Oh my gosh, yes. Of course there is. This, like, and that's what actually is the most annoying about this entire thing, is stuff like this happens and it just gives our politicians, they're just licking their chops and, oh, here we go. More bills we can pass. All the government agencies are just like, got to figure out how we can justify our salary somehow. Oh, here we go. Got a bunch of bills we can pass now around cryptocurrency or, you know, whatever. And it's just more regulation that doesn't actually solve problems. It just
it's just out there, avoided by the next SPF. Right.
Well, I mean, think again. I know we're trying to wrap this up, but just real quick on that, the Dodd-Frank rules in 2008 were supposed to stop runs on the bank. Well, what happened to SVB and whatever the couple were last year? Guess it didn't. And the regulate, you know, as more information comes out, like, it was simple economics that Silicon Valley Bank was doing incorrectly, and they were fine taking that risk, but it was the regulators that didn't spot the simple economics of them loading up on long-term treasuries at an extremely low interest rate and not seeing that that could cause adverse consequences once interest rates start going up. You're the ones regulating this. How do you not catch that? You're looking through their books. Like, so that's my big thing, is if we're going to create regulation, let's actually make sure that's intelligent and then enforce it rather than have situations like that, I guess.
All right. Anything else you want to add before we...
Nope. That's all good. That's Q1. Hopefully Q2 continues on this path. It's been pretty good.
Right on. We hope this episode has been helpful. As always, thanks for listening. If you haven't yet, please like and subscribe and leave us a review. If you have any questions or suggestions, shoot us an email at podcast@financiallysharp.com. That is podcast@financiallysharp.com. For Tanner, I'm Adam. You will see us and hear us in the next episode. Stay financially sharp.
This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. This podcast does not engage in rendering legal, tax, financial, or other professional services. Investment advisory services are offered through Harmony Wealth, a registered investment advisor authorized to do business in states where registered or otherwise exempt from registration. If you have questions pertaining to your specific situation, please contact Harmony Wealth at 602-935-5155 or at harmonywealthaz.com.